Well, my name's Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission, and we've been holding hearings all over the state to allow Alaska Natives and other Alaskans to testify about ANCSA, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971, how it's worked out, the good side and the bad side. Sometimes I think we hear a little more about the bad side than the good side, but I think that is the way things always go when you are looking at something 14 years later with the benefit of hindsight. But we've been all over the state. We've had 56 meetings in 56 villages and towns, and a lot of people have testified. We've had approximately 1,300 people testify, and we're pretty much on the home stretch now. We visited Togiak and New Stoyahawk and New Halen last month, and we're here in Dillingham today, and then we'll be here again tomorrow, and then we hope to take some testimony at the Native Convention on Monday evening. So really, this is an opportunity for you to talk about ANCSA, your impressions of it, how it's worked out, the corporations, the share structure, the 1991 issues, whether there should be restrictions on the sale of shares continued after 1991. What do people want to do about that? How concerned are they about the possible shift of control in Native corporations from Native people to non-Natives if the shares are freely transferable after 1991? What about taxation of Native land in the 1990s if revenues from Prudhoe Bay decline and the state decides that in rural Alaska it wants to look to other sources of revenue and considers taxing undeveloped lands, as it will have the power to do in the years after 1991? What about dividends? What about jobs? To what extent has ANCSA lived up to the hopes that Native people had for it? To what extent has it lived up to the hopes that Congress had for it? Then there are related questions that always come up at these meetings, subsistence, Native sovereignty, other questions, and if anyone wants to address those, certainly I'm happy to hear what you've got to say. People are concerned about what's going to happen. What measures can be taken to ensure that Native land stays in Native hands? What measures can be taken to enable Native children born since 1971 to participate in the settlement? What measures can be taken to protect access to fish and game? All of those questions seem to arise out of ANCSA. So we're here for the rest of the afternoon, and we'll stay as long as you like, and we're here tomorrow afternoon as well, and then at the Native Convention on Monday night. If you'd like to talk about any of these questions, feel free to come forward. And if you wouldn't mind taking a seat at this microphone to my right, and there's a reason for that. Jim Sykes over here... I was going to say the man with the beard and the earphones, but both of them fit that description. But you know Bob King, and Jim Sykes travels with me. He takes everything down on tape, and so if you speak at this microphone, it means that everything will go down on tape, and it'll be transcribed, and there is a permanent record of everything that is said at these hearings. And there's a reason for that. When this is all over, and it will soon be over, I've been traveling for a year. I've been to 56 villages and towns, and we're only going to go to about three more. And then I'm going to write a report about ANCSA based on what you've told me. That's why I want everything taken down, so that at the end of my work there's a complete record of what Alaska Natives and others have told me at these hearings. And my report will be based on what people say. Now, I'm not appointed by the government of the United States, and I'm not appointed by the Alaska state government. I'm not from Washington or Juneau. I've been asked to do this by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimo people from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland, and the World Council of Indigenous People, which is an international organization of Indian people from North and South America, is co-sponsoring this commission. And the job I've been asked to do is to hold these hearings and then to write a report based on your testimony, outlining how ANCSA has worked out and making recommendations that I hope will be useful to you about all of these questions that everybody's talking about and everybody's concerned about. 1991 shares, the new natives, subsistence, sovereignty, all of these things that have got Alaska Natives in a very, very concerned nowadays. I'm also going to make recommendations for Native people in other countries so that they can learn from what has happened here, from the good things that have happened, and from the things that didn't work out as well as people had hoped. Mistakes were made, and there's no reason why folks in other countries shouldn't learn from those as well. So, having said that, we're open for business, I'm finished talking. Yes, yes, sir.
Are you going to take us in order?
In any order. It doesn't matter to me. If you want to start, sir, or if...
I'd kind of like to start. I want to go to a fishing game.
Well, then I guess you better.
I don't...
I thought that was canceled, somebody was telling me.
No, not when it concerns fish. They don't cancel nothing.
Maybe, for the record, you could state your name.
Harvey Samuelson. And I've been involved in this native land claim since the beginning.
And you're the president of the Dillingham Native Corporation?
No, I used to be chairman. I started Bristol Bay Native Corporation. I started Bristol Bay Native Association.
You're responsible for all this?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it. But to me, you know, this native land claim's been going on ever since the day them Indians shook hands with Columbus when he got off the boat. And it's been a going deal since. I know that native land claims, I know it wasn't perfect in 1971 since we signed it, but that was the best we could compromise at that time with Congress and with the Senators, Congress, State of Alaska, and us. And we knew it wasn't perfect, so... I explained to this, prior to 1971, all the natives I talked to, they wanted the land settlement of some sort. You know, they felt there had to be a land settlement. We knew it wasn't perfect, but that was the best we could compromise at that time. And a lot of them, they talk a little bit about sovereignty, but not too much, you know. I really wanted to see this Native Land Claims Bill for the simple reason, before World War II, 75% of the taxes that was collected in the state of Alaska come out of Bristol Bay. And when I first come here in 1949, there was no school at Togiak, there was no school at Manakuduk. I mean, they were just grabbing the country. The best lands belonged to the cannery, which they still do today. Wherever there's freshwater outlets and stuff, they were claimed. They just shoved the natives aside. Well, a good example is right here in Dillingham. There used to be natives living down where the post office, cold storage is. Old man Andrew from Stuyahawk, Murphy family, they never were paid for that property. The people come along and surveyed it when it was there and just bulldozed them out of there and took the lands to the city of Dillingham and sold them. You know, there was no consideration whatsoever for native people by the city here. And I could go on for the rest of it, but I'm talking about right here at our doorsteps. So, in line of that, I was glad to see the native land claims developed and done. But I'm a firm believer that the natives should hang on to their land that was given to them under the settlement. They should be given to them for forever, for perpetuity. And anything less than that would be unacceptable as I see it, because there'll be corporate takeovers coming and other stuff coming. And for the life of me, I don't believe the oil companies, when they keep drilling and they find nothing but dry holes on native land, there must be something. They don't want to find any, as far as I'm concerned. So that's about all.
The dry holes, you mean, and, they don't want to find any until they acquire it themselves?
Sure.
Is that your point?
Just like they did in Louisiana with the farmers. And I went to school, I was born and raised at Okeechuk on the Kuskokwim River. I went to BIA school. I went to territorial school. And there was never nothing mentioned in any schools that I went to by the teachers or by the staff of any land settlements of any kind. The first I was aware of it, that we could get something along native land claims, was from Bob Bartlett. Bob Bartlett was the only one that ever mentioned it. There was no state officials or territorial officials or BIA officials ever told the native people about that. So I just like to bring that out. And I don't know, I could go on and on, but that's about all.
Go on for a bit. These folks, I'm sure, don't mind.
I'll give you a little bit of history. When I first come here fishing in Bristol Bay, the native people of Alaska fishing here for the canneries that stole all this fish, stole the land. The outside fishermen, immigrants from Italy, immigrants from other nations of the world, Norway, Finland, that come to this country, were able to catch 2,000 fish a day when we were on limit. And us residents, if we were lucky, we were limited to 1,350. That went on until the 50s, till we start raising a little bit hell ourselves. And we were also given second-handed equipment by the great salmon industry. And
did you rented your boats from the industry?
They gave us boats. Even when we become independent fishermen, they still wouldn't take 2,000 fish a day limit from certain fishermen. All the resident fishermen. But they'd give them goddamn Dago's 2,000 fish. Still gets me mad today. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, really, this native land claims was a landmark deal, because before that, our people, it gave our people recognition, the right to their land. And that was the first major victory since the United States bought Alaska, took over Alaska, was I don't care. A lot of people say native land claim was no good and everything else, these Monday morning quarterbacks. But, damn it, it was the first right we got to our lands and gave us some sort of identity. Because our people are in line with natural resources, land, and they've coexisted for years together. And hopefully they could coexist forever.
What do you think about, you say that Native people's land should be held by them in perpetuity. The way ANCS is set up, there is, if the legislation is not changed, the shares can be bought and sold in 1991, and if leaving regional corporations out of it, but if a village corporation with maybe a couple of hundred shareholders, if somebody from Anchorage or Seattle or Tokyo or, God forbid, Naples comes along and buys up half of those shares, just half of them, spends a few days walking around town and buys them up, then he's going to own the corporation and all the land. So what do you think, if you care to comment, should be done? Should the restrictions on the shares be continued, or should people be allowed to sell their shares? What do you think?
Myself, I personally think it's up to each individual. But I think there's got to be dissenters' rights put in. On land, you know, they're nuts to sell any stock in their country or any place else because they don't make land anymore. You know, before the Native Land Claim Settlement Act, there was lots of land, but they don't make it anymore. It's all tied up. In fact, the animals, the grass, mice, and everything else, we made a better deal for them than we did for our own people. We got 40 million acres and the mice got lots. Lots of land. The animals got lots of land. So it should have been really called an animal bill, I guess. Because the environmentalist one, state of Alaska, they got some property. Federal government wound up with the majority of it. I don't know. Our native people are proud of their land, and I just hope they keep it.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much, sir.
Donald F. Nielsen. I'm the Senior Vice President of the Bristol Bay Native Corporation. And I grew up in this, in the Bristol Bay region, and have been active in Native affairs for the past 17 years. Today I would like to tell you my views on alternative organizations. There are basically three types: nonprofit corporations, cooperative corporations, in IRAs. Some people think the present corporation should be replaced with one of these. Why do they think an alternative organization would be better? One, they think it would offer greater land protection. Two, they think it would be more sensitive to their values. and three, they think it would be easier to understand and operate. Let's look at each of these hopes. Land protection. I believe that the best protection for native land is a healthy corporation and the land bank. Dollars are necessary for corporations to have enough money to protect their land. Also, when corporations are healthy, their land wouldn't have to be taken to pay debts. In addition, there is a land bank to protect land in the ways that money cannot. The land bank protects the land from squatters, undeveloped land from real property taxes, the land from being taken to satisfy debts. Nonprofits, cooperatives, IRAs, none offer these clear legal protections. Only if the federal government were willing to accept ANSCA land in trust could greater land protection be achieved. But Congress and the Department of Interior are not in favor of accepting any more land in trust. In fact, attorneys for the Interior Department say they think accepting any ANSCA land in trust would be illegal. There are no indications that Congress or the Department of Interior will change its position in the next decade. And I might add that it doesn't make any difference whether it's a Democratic administration or a Republican. The situation is the same. Also, the U.S. government has not always acted in the best interest of the American Indians or Alaska Natives where land is concerned. I would like to quote from the 1984 report and recommendations by the Presidential Commission on Indian Reservations Economies. I quote, "Centuries of dishonor by the United States in fulfilling its duty of care and protection as set forth in practically every treaty have instilled a fear in Indian tribes that is rational to the extent that there have been historical takings of Indian lands," unquote. This pattern by the Department of Interior continues today with its handling of ANSCA. After all, the Secretary of Interior is the one responsible for carrying out the settlement. ANSCA was supposed to be carried out rapidly, with certainty, and without litigation. None of these conditions have been met. Land was supposed to be conveyed immediately to regional and village corporations. Conveyance took years in many cases, and in some cases, corporations even had to go to court to get their land. With the conveyance process did begin, it became clear that the Interior's ideas of legal title was different from ANSCA promised. There have been problems with easements. Interior required public easements across Native lands for recreational and other uses. Native corporations have had to go to court over and over again to get reasonable easements. Land surveying. Interior tried to use survey methods which were different from those used in the lower 48 and which would not give Native corporations adequate title or their full amount of land. Land bank protections. Even the new land bank guidelines, as first proposed by the Interior Department, would offer less than ideal protection. They would require public access to Native lands in exchange for technical assistance to Natives in managing, protecting their lands. Nearly every time Interior has first proposed a regulation for ANSCA land, the regulation has been unreasonable or has restricted the rights of Native corporations. It has taken years of effort by the corporations and much money to get Interior to carry out the act in a reasonable way. Therefore, I cannot be in favor of turning over ownership of BBNC's land rights to the Department of Interior. sensitivity to values. Some people hope that a tribal government would automatically have good leadership, always be responsive to the needs of the native people, always act in the best interest of all the people instead of itself, never use power for personal gain, never misuse its authority. However, the experience of the American Indians on reservations in the lower 48 show that this hasn't always happened. Again, quoting from the findings of the Presidential Commission on Indian Reservation Economies, I quote, "Indian tribal governments' failure to adhere to a constitutional principle separating executive, legislative, and judicial powers has had a detrimental effect on governmental functioning. For example, the failure to establish a clear separation of powers between the tribal council and the tribal judiciary has resulted in political interference with the tribal courts, weakening their independence and raising doubts about fairness and the rule of law," unquote. When leaders aren't required by law to act honestly and use power correctly, abuse usually occurs. As you know, BBNC did a survey of its own shareholders on their attitudes and goals. Our shareholders said they want to keep the current protection from management abuse. Therefore, BBNC cannot favor any system which offers fewer legal protections for its shareholders. One major reason that people may feel worried about understanding and operating a native corporation is that it is a system new to us. It is a system for running a business, for managing land and money. What if the corporation is exchanged for an alternative organization? The alternative organizations, nonprofit, cooperatives, or IRAs are also business systems. They too will have to be learned. And perhaps most important, we still have to manage our own land and money. There's no doubt about it. Management is hard. Anyone who has managed anything from a fishing boat to a home definitely knows that. But if the native community wants to use and keep what we have, it must be managed. The management system with the most extensive, most clearly defined rules is the profit corporation. It's important to have well-developed rules for two reasons. One, well-developed rules gives better protection than rules which are untested, vague, or non-existent. Two, well-developed rules result in lower legal costs. And in conclusion, I would like to say that Congress and the Native leaders chose the Profit Corporation to manage ANSCA lands and money. I believe that the system continues to offer the best protection coupled with the greatest economic opportunity. I thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Nielsen. Thank you very much. I wonder if I could just ask you about a couple of things you mentioned. What about the question of the sale of shares? I don't think you addressed that directly. Perhaps you did, and I didn't.
I didn't really address it.
Well, if you feel free to do so, can you tell me how you react to that? Where do you think that's headed, or ought to be headed?
Well, I hope that the Native people would be successful in seeking new legislation or amendments to ANSCA to give provisions to allow corporations across Alaska to get restrictions, further restrictions on the sale of Native stock. But also, I believe that, you know, for those folks that want an avenue to get out of the system, be allowed to do so. But I think, you know, in order to protect what we have, we most definitely need further restrictions on the sale of stock. But I think that some people don't clearly understand that the land is not restricted. The sale of stock is restricted. Therefore, a corporation could sell its land today. It could lose its land today for debts. It could lose its land to squatters. However, in seeking new legislation to restrict stock, we have to also amend, I think, the Act to provide ways to prevent the loss of native land.
You mean by allowing corporations to pass resolutions restricting the sale of stocks, or by measures applying to the land itself?
Well, both. I mean, you want provisions to allow further restrictions on the sale of stock, but also you want better ways of stopping the loss of the land or the selling of the land.
What about the people that want to get out of the system, that want to sell their shares and get their money? How do you think that should be handled? If you have restrictions on the sale of shares, then who are they going to sell to?
Well, Harvey mentioned earlier dissenters. And I think that there is a number of resolutions floating around the state, AFN resolutions on stock restriction, land protection, and alternative organizations. The way those resolutions are drafted, and if legislation is drafted from those resolutions, the native people, the native corporations would be locked in with no avenue for those that want out to get out. We strongly believe, we did a legal analysis of those issues, and we think that they're unconstitutional, and it is a Fifth Amendment taking. So if legislation is passed, the shareholders themselves would have to vote on whether they want further restricted stock. For those that vote against it, the dissenters would be allowed to sell out to the corporations.
Oh, so that when the resolution is put forward to restrict the sale of shares after 1991, the people who vote against that, those dissenters, they can cash in.
Yes.
But in the future, nobody can.
That's right. In our theory is that every generation would be allowed to vote on further restricted stock. Let's say, for example, that we were successful in getting legislation to do that, that we would vote before 1991 and have it restricted for the next 20 to 50 years. And when that time ran out, then it would go before the shareholders again for another vote. Because you know as well as I do that no matter what kind of people you are, your values change almost on a daily basis.
Well, maybe not a daily basis, but they do change, I agree. I take it, if you don't mind my asking you, that that your legal advisors feel that particular arrangement would not run afoul of the Fifth Amendment, but that if there was legislation that allowed a resolution to be passed that didn't even permit those dissenting at that time to cash in, that that would be against the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah, well, we strongly believe that that if there isn't any dissenter rights allowed, I don't believe that Congress wants to pay another bill, because every shareholder has a vested right in what they own.
Sorry, you mean Congress doesn't want to assume the responsibility for cashing out the shareholders?
Mm-hmm. Our other fear that on dissenter rights is that if Congress does go ahead and pass legislation without the center rights, that come 1991, a shareholder in any corporation takes you to court, that the legislation be thrown out, and we would be worse off then than we are today, because we would be left without protection. That's our fear. It isn't our fear about Congress having to pay more. I mean, that's fine. we just fear that none of the proposed legislation, if passed, would be thrown out, because the court is the final decision.
So let's suppose people opt out of the system by cashing in, leaving BB&C out of it and just looking at villages.
Sure.
Suppose you had a village where the vote was 60-40 to pass a resolution to restrict sale of shares. Mm-hmm. 40% of the people in the village vote to get out. Well, I've got two questions, and let me deal with them in turn. How do they get paid? I mean, who pays them? Who buys those shares? Anybody on no. Anybody out there?
The corporation itself.
Okay. How is the so there's a you can only sell to one person, one legal person, the corporation. How is the price fixed? Have you thought about that?
Well, that too is a big question which we are addressing. There was this idea in a lot of people's minds that that if you were able to cash out, you know, you would receive a large sum of money for the stock. But keep in mind that if 60% of the people voted to restrict the stock, 40% wanted out, that in essence what the corporation is buying is restricted stock. Therefore, the value is less. So there is a few types of value systems that you could not use. One, you could not use market value because it isn't publicly traded. Secondly, you wouldn't use book value. And probably the third thing that you would use is capitalized value of the stock. If you look at the income stream of the corporation and say, if you were a prudent investor, how much would you be willing to invest to have that certain amount of income come back? The value of the stock isn't going to be as great as people have in mind.
Yeah. You, when you say the income stream, you mean the income stream to the corporation?
Yes.
Or the dividend, the record income, of payment of dividends?
The income stream to the corporation.
Well, okay. And let's suppose that you did have a village where that happened.
Yeah.
And 60% of the people are still in the corporation. The other people, by whatever means, have been cashed out, so mm-hmm. they're not shareholders. And if it's a village, and there are some in this region, and that where people use the land and so on, you have 60% of the people who still own the land
mm-hmm.
through ownership of the corporation. 40% of the people really have no legal interest in the land. They mm-hmm. are out.
They're John Q. Public.
They're John Q. Public. They're just like somebody who moved in from Seattle and said hi there.
Mm-hmm.
I know values change and so on, but that's part of it that troubles me. Have you thought about what might happen? What the reality would be in those villages? Suppose those folks wanted to go out and hunt, and the 60%.
No.
When game got scarce, said, hey, wait a minute.
We don't have to wait until 1991 to look at that, because it is happening around us today, where some of the village corporations have, well, first of all, before ANSCA, you know, the native people hunted and trapped wherever they pleased to trap. There were no boundaries, so if the trapping was better in Iliamna, folks went to Iliamna to trap, and if it were better here, vice versa. So people were able to move anywhere they wanted to. But today, Since the title to land has come, some of the village corporations are posting their lands to no trespassing. So I, being a native from Village X, can't go to Village Y and use it for subsistence. It's closed to me. So it's happening today. But one of the things that a person must think about is when you do sell your shares of stock, you're selling your rights. And that's it, pure and simple. You become part of the gray people.
The gray people.
Yeah.
Well, certainly these are very, very difficult questions, and I know you and your colleagues have thought about them, and they aren't easy to sort out.
Well, it's more difficult than that. You know, it's very difficult to inform the shareholders on such a complicated matter. It's very difficult. It's hard for me to understand, and I'm involved in it on a daily basis, so I can imagine what it's like, you know, for the shareholder on the street, you know, to try to comprehend all of this stuff and make their decisions.
One last question. What about the new natives? What do you think, should anything be done to enable them to participate?
Well, when we took our survey back in August and September, the majority of our shareholders was against allowing new natives in. So we're not really addressing that. AFN is going ahead with it, and since they are, we're going to make sure that the option, I mean, it would be an option provision, so that if a village here feels strongly that new natives should be allowed in, there's a way for them to do it. Whereas another village or another corporation doesn't want to have it, they don't have to. But interesting, you know, that's there is some strong feelings about allowing new natives in. And I was talking with a group of young shareholders a year or so ago, and I asked them that very question. I says, do you think new natives should be allowed in? And they says, oh, most definitely. And I says, even if it were to cost you personally, would you still allow it? And they says, no way. You know.
Yeah. One. I said that was the last question. Let me just ask you one more. I spoke to the United Tribes of Alaska meeting a couple of nights ago, and I said, you know, it seems to me that this question of tribal governments and corporations isn't necessarily a question of either or. You know, there may be room for both. And I said, look, tribal government movement is growing in Alaska.
Sure.
I've been all over the state, and you can see it happening
mm-hmm.
day by day. But I said, ANCSA has done one thing, that it has gotten Native people into business, managing these businesses. Somebody's got to run those businesses. I said you should think about whether there isn't room for both tribal governments and corporations, I'm just curious how you feel about that.
Well, I've
is there room for only one kid on the block? Or?
Oh, no. I've given it some thought over the past few years, and I think when the IRA issues first surfaced, it's my opinion that it surfaced because some village corporations were unable to manage what they had, and they strongly felt then, and I think they strongly feel today, that the IRAs is a much more simpler operation, and all that you have to do is turn your assets over to this organization, and it's going to take care of you forever. Well, it's very untrue, because you have to manage that as well as you have to manage what you have today. But I think there is, room for all kinds of organizations, including IRAs, and I think for those communities that have them today. And I'll give you a couple examples, or two names, St. Paul and Ketchikan. For those folks, I mean, for those communities, the IRAs have been very good. But they've used it in a way that it supported everything else that was being done in that community. What we're hearing, you know, from the folks up north that are carrying this IRA banner is, I think, something different. I think they're looking for a cause of some sort. I don't know exactly what that hidden agenda is, but they do work, and there is room for them. And I really don't understand, you know, what this flag-waving thing is about IRAs today. I mean, if you want it, go out and get it and use it. You don't have to convince me or anybody else that it's a good thing.
Right. Okay. Could you leave that with me?
Sure.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. Nielsen. I sure appreciate your taking your time to come and discuss these things with us. Sure, by all means.
My name is Dora Klein. I'm presently employed by the Dillingham City Schools. I'm the second grade teacher. I'm originally from Aleknagik, Alaska. I think you've been up to Aleknagik already. During 1971, I was a member of the city council, the Aleknagik City Council, and during that time the INCSA came about.